This is 105.9 The Region, and you're listening to Discovery, the radio show for podcasters. Your content, unfiltered. This is Discovery.
Hello, I'm Cal Steiger, and welcome to Discovery. On today's episode, we wrap up the Durham College student podcasts with two final features. There's a few reasons why, as viewers, we may lose interest in our favorite show, series, or movie franchise. Maybe something dreadful happens to a leading role that we loved. Or maybe the screen adaptation steers away from the originally written story we knew it to be and leave the viewer with something disagreeable. The hosts of Death of a TV Series are about to break down these specifics of what went wrong for them in one of their favorites, The Walking Dead.
Hello and welcome everybody to the Death of a Television Series. I'm your host today, Kent Stevens, with my wonderful guest host, Katie Emmett. How are you doing today, Katie?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. And today on our series, if you don't know, what we like to do here is we basically take the life and death cycle of a television series and examine the moments where we think it went wrong and how it, you know, essentially died. So this week, we're going to be talking about none other than, ironically, The Walking Dead, which I'm sure you're a huge fan of. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes, I was.
Was. Oh, past tense. Did it put a sour taste in your mouth?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The last few seasons weren't the best.
Did you stop watching the show after a while?
Yeah, I stopped watching it after Rick left. So,
yeah.
Like, sometime in season 9, I think it was.
It was season 9, and that's actually one of the moments that I kind of wanted to bring up as well, too, when examining the death of The Walking Dead, even though it's still currently shambling on in three different miniseries. Have you watched any of those, by the way?
Nope, haven't.
No? Not the Daryl show? I know you're a big fan of
Yeah, he was my favorite, yes.
He was?
Well, he is, I guess, Daryl, yeah. If I would watch the show again, yes, he would be my favorite. But no, I haven't seen any of the other TV shows. Not that, like, I don't want to. I just, you know, just haven't gotten around to it. Like, I would want to see where they're going with it, but I don't know if they're going to any good.
Just a temporary side topic before getting into the meat of our discussion. I know that there are, like, several other shows, including still Fear the Walking Dead, which is still going on, which I know you weren't a fan of.
Yeah, no, I didn't like that one.
Even when it was originally a prequel series before it caught up to the main timeline.
Yes.
There was also The Walking Dead World Beyond, which was essentially just River. Yeah, I know that not a lot of people know this when it existed.
I didn't know
it was basically just Riverdale, but set in The Walking Dead. I'm not kidding.
Oh,
it was,
then no.
That it,
no.
It only lasted for 2 seasons, and it was pretty terrible. A lot of people either didn't know it existed, or worse, didn't like it when they did know it existed. It was pretty bad.
Yeah, I'd never even heard of it.
Okay,
so.
Well, this is news to me as well, too. There's also now the new Negan and Maggie show. For those of you who don't know, Negan was for a while one of the big antagonists of the show, and then eventually a pseudo anti-hero who still has, like, issues with his now co-star. Well, I mean, not in real life in the show.
Oh, with Maggie.
Yeah, the character-wise.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
oh.
This.
Oh, yeah.
Which, again, is dumb because they can't seem to figure out a direction for the story to go on between the two of them, where she's mad that, spoiler alert, he, you know, killed her husband.
Yes.
And she, you know, can't seem to make up her mind about whether or not to avenge him or to just let bygones be bygones.
Yeah.
And then there's the Daryl show, which somehow finds him in Paris.
Which I don't understand.
And then recently, the last couple of weeks have been releasing the Rick and Michonne show, The Ones Who Live, which I guess features what happened to Rick after he was unceremoniously removed from the main show when the actual actor, Andrew Lincoln, wanted to spend some more time with his family back in, I want to say, 2019. And they had to,
yeah.
They're basically using this as a way to make up for lost time and to explain, I guess, what happened to him and what he's been up to and where he's been. So now that we're all caught up, what are some moments in the main TV series that you think kind of killed The Walking Dead?
Well, the moment for me was when they killed off Carl. Because, I mean, I never read any of the comic books, but you've told me that he was still alive. And he was, like, he had a big role in the comics. So I was expecting them to go that way with the show, but then they killed him off. And I was like, excuse me?
And that's kind of the big difference. You were more of a show buff, whereas
yes.
I read the comics mostly.
Yeah.
And so key differences in the comics versus the books. It's like Game of Thrones, which we're probably going to get into in another episode as well, too. And yeah, she's giving side eye to that as well, too. But in the comics, the point of the series was that It was supposed to be passing the torch to the younger generation who grew up in this apocalypse. Carl was supposed to make it to the very end. And we'll get into the comics as well, too, very briefly, and how they abruptly ended, because that was also, like, behind-the-scenes stuff happened that really didn't seem to sit well with me and a lot of people when it ended. But they decided to unceremoniously kill off Chandler Riggs' character Carl Grimes, the son of Rick Grimes, which, I know, like, maybe I should put into perspective now, but since it's been, you know, roughly 13 years since the show aired, I doubt there's still anyone who doesn't know the premise of it, but just to clarify, the point of the show is that it's basically County Sheriff Rick Grimes wakes up from a brief coma just after the world has ended due to a zombie apocalypse and sets out to find his wife and son. That's how the series begins. And it just progresses long and long enough where he finds them and he meets with a group of survivors, yada, yada, yada. They now spend the rest of the show trying to, you know, find places that are safe to live, keep people alive, rebuild society, beautiful stuff like that. Of course, they lose people along the way. You know, it's a show about zombies. Not everyone's going to make it. And surprisingly, one of the characters that didn't make it was his own son in the TV show. And this is where... I'm sorry, you were going to say something there.
No, I was just going to say, like, because that's basically what the show was about. It was about making a better world for his kids.
And then...
Essentially, yeah. Right? So it's like, you kill him off, then what does he have to live for?
Well, exactly. And that was kind of a weird point, especially in season 8. I want to say seasons 7 to 9 were kind of like the weirdest part for the television series, right? And I think season 7 definitely killed it for a lot of people.
Oh.
Like, I don't just mean like this first episode of the season, which I do want to talk about. I mean the entire season of season 7. It was, without a doubt, a filler season, which is okay. Filler seasons are usually used to set up something bigger. The problem is that it wasn't... The amount of episodes it had didn't justify it being interesting still, if you know what I mean. Like, it was a boring season. Besides the first and last episode, name one episode of that season that's memorable.
No, I can't, because I gotta be honest, I can't even remember, beside Glenn dying and Abraham dying, that's all I remember from that season. Yeah. I can't remember, like, what was the last episode even about? Was that the fight with Negan?
It was the first fight they had at Alexandria.
His throat?
No, that was season 8.
Oh, see...
Yeah.
Then I don't remember that fight.
Yeah, exactly. It was kind of a...
Oh, it was the fight at... what is that place called?
Alexandria.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Exactly. And, but yeah, so you brought up the death of Carl.
Yes.
Which I 100% agree. I was very annoyed. You were very annoyed. Comic fans were very annoyed. Your mom was quite thrilled because she hates him.
Yes, my mom was, she didn't like Carl, so she was happy.
Which I never understood, but we're just going to move past that.
She thought he was annoying, I don't know. Mm.
Another episode that, you know, we talked about that put a nail into the coffin of why people really dislike the show was season 7, episode 1, The Death of Glenn and Abraham by the Hands of Negan. Now, I understand why that put a lot of people off. That was, in my opinion, a kind of a gross episode.
Mm-hmm.
It was gratuitously violent to the point where it shouldn't have been on TV, and it put a lot of people off.
It was pretty bad.
Like, it's not even because of the storyline or anything, but purely because of the content that was put on TV. It mm-hmm. was appalling.
Like the eyeball.
It was a mm-hmm. lot of it was too much. It was a lot, and people were actually kind of fed up with the show at that point, especially like they lost two of their favorite characters
yeah, so
and in like... a grotesque way, and people actually boycotted the show because of that. Behind the scenes, a lot of people were furious with the gratuitous amounts of violence.
I didn't know that.
It was bad. It was a bad time.
Yeah, that was, I mean I get that, like, that's what happened in the comics and all, but like,
yeah, but I have
they didn't need to show that much.
I have to admit, they could have done it better than they did. It could have been more tasteful. Mm-hmm. Not tasteful, because it's a murder, but...
Yeah, but, like, you know.
You know, like, they could have done it... I don't know. The death of Ned Stark in Game of Thrones was done very well.
Oh, that was good, yeah.
Like, it hit hard because it was a beloved character who died, but they did it well because you didn't see him actually get decapitated.
Yeah, you just... Yeah.
It was very much implied.
That was good.
But we all knew he died.
Yeah. I mean, I can see why they couldn't really go that route with Glenn and Abraham.
They could have basically just had, like, as grim as it sounds, they could have had, like, they kind of did do it, but then they also cut to them, like, actually showing it. I think, yeah. I think they,
oh,
yeah.
Like, show the reactions,
listen to it off camera, and then maybe show the final result. You don't need to show it in progress. That was very gross. Yeah. Nobody liked that.
No, yeah, that would have been a good way to handle that situation.
But what do I know? I'm not in cinema.
Well, you know.
So another episode, in my humble opinion, that I actually think kind of put the nail in the coffin of The Walking Dead was season 9, episode 5, I believe. It was 5 or 6. No, it was episode 5. It's the one where Rick blows up the bridge. And
his last episode he's ever in. Yeah.
People watched the show for Rick Grimes.
Yeah, he was the main character.
He was the guy. You ever seen Spy Kids 3? He's the guy.
Yeah, he's the guy. Yeah.
And without your main character, Game of Thrones got away with it because they had several main characters.
They had a lot of characters,
and not one of them was solely the focus.
Yeah.
That's why they could, you know, get away with axing Ned at the start.
Yes.
Again, not to criticize Game of Thrones twice now, but they did. I will admit where they did right.
Yeah.
But with the death, air quotes, of Rick Grimes, because spoiler alert, obviously everyone knows he didn't die because now he has a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, he just, and I get it, behind the scenes, Andrew Lincoln just wanted, you know, to spend some time with his family and kind of, you know, go home and, you know, live a life before his kids grew up. But I don't know. Like, I think he could have stuck it out because they only did 2 other seasons after that.
I know. Yeah, it's not like the show went on that long after he left.
Yeah.
Which, maybe that's why, because he left. So yeah. They were like, okay, well, might as well just end the show. It's not doing very well.
Speaking of ending the show prematurely, and this is what I wanted to talk, this is what I was kind of hinting at earlier. So Robert Kirkman, creator of the comics, right?
Mm-hmm.
He and AMC have been having a sort of shadow war with each other for the last couple of years behind the scenes.
Oh.
Yeah, in case you hadn't noticed by the slow decline in quality of the show. To the point where basically he said, all right, I will sell you the rights to the title and property of The Walking Dead for the TV series if you leave the comics alone. And they basically came to an agreement on that. But then I guess Robert Kirkman got a little fed up with I think he got tired of The Walking Dead,
mm-hmm.
and he wanted to move on to bigger and better things, i.e. his new series Invincible, which is now on Amazon Prime, which is also amazing, and also starring Stephen Yeun. Which I don't know
I
if you know,
that.
Because I know
no,
you're not, I yeah, I know you're not a fan of superheroes who aren't Marvel.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, so he basically killed off the Walking Dead comic series so abruptly that it left fans of the series who have been reading for years going, wait, what? It was quite a blindside. It just, because he suddenly came out with the issue called, I believe it was like The Death of Rick Grimes or something like that, or The Last Day on Earth, I believe.
Oh, I think I've heard of that.
Yeah, and basically, it ended, in the comics, it ended with Pamela Milton's son, who, spoiler alert, dies in the show and doesn't die in the comics. Like, it's kind of bad, but basically Rick dies as a sort of a martyr to, I guess, improve the new world, because then Sebastian gets put behind bars, and they do like a 10-year time skip. I'm not kidding, a 10-year time skip where basically all the zombies are basically, I guess...
Well, they're just gone?
Well, they rotted away to a degree where there's like so few of them.
Okay.
And then Carl just basically reads the entirety of The Walking Dead as a bedtime story to his daughter, and that's how the series ends in the comics. And everyone was just kind of like, well, that's it? Yeah, I know. It wasn't good.
It wasn't good.
And that was also another nail in the coffin for not just TV fans, but also for comic fans as well, too.
Yeah. I mean, it was a great show.
Mm-hmm.
It was.
And speaking of that, we're going to have to end our show here today, but thank you for tuning in to The Death of a TV Series. I'm your host, Kent Stevens, here with my co-host, Katie. Have a great day.
Pop Culture Mark can be a nostalgic conversation for some, talking about the impact of Much Music and other TV programs that were all about the music videos. For others, they've joined us in an era that faded out the need for that type of TV programming. Hosts Mark and Owen have a cross-generational chat about the Much Music era.
Welcome to Pop Culture Mark, where we discuss major events, trends, and moments that have made their mark on the entertainment industry and left a lasting impact on the pop culture world. Today, we'll be talking about how music videos changed the music industry and the importance of music video platforms like MTV and Much Music. I'm your host, Mark Dixon, and I'm joined by my co-host for this episode, Owen Loudon. Hi, Owen.
How are you doing, Mark?
Pretty good, thanks. I'm excited about this conversation we're going to have. And I'm just going to let everyone know full disclosure here, I'm part of the Gen X generation, the MTV Much Music generation. And Owen here is part of the Gen Z generation.
Yep. I'm an 04 baby, and Mark is a...
Yes, from another decade.
Correct.
So it is pretty clear we are going to have a little different experience.
For sure.
Obviously, you haven't really grown up with music videos the same way I did. And so we're going to compare and contrast that a little bit, which I think will be a fun conversation to have.
With you, Mark, it's always a fun conversation.
Thank you, Owen. This episode, we are talking about the impact of MTV and Much Music and their huge popularity from the 1980s well into the 2000s. MTV in the United States was the first major music television network on the air, launching on the 1st of August, 1981. Famously, the first video played on MTV was Video Killed the Radio Star by The Buggles. Canada followed suit with the premiere of Much Music on August 31st, 1984. Their first sort of video was by UB Blake. It was a musical short from the 1920s. However, their first proper music video they played was The Enemy Within by Rush, which was a classic Canadian band, so great choice there. And the catchy Much Music slogan was The Nation's Music Station. So as I was saying, I'm definitely part of that generation that grew up with that from the time I was a kid. And music videos had started even before MTV and Much Music, but they didn't really have a platform, not on that level. There were some shows that dedicated to music videos, even going back as far as the Beatles, and that well before your time, even before my time.
I know who the Beatles are.
But even they, like, they had a movie that was almost sort of like music videos. And the Monkees and other bands, even the 60s, were doing little short things. But again, there really wasn't any place to show them, at least not like on a network on a regular basis. But so for me, from the time I was like a preteen, music videos had already started. And prior to Much Music and MTV, there were a couple of like regular shows I watched that did feature music videos. After school, there was When Video Hits with Samantha Taylor. And it was on, I believe, CBC, and it was whatever time of day. It was right after school, so you could watch it Monday to Friday. It was like a half hour of the big hits. And then there was also Good Rockin' Tonight with Stu Jeffries. That was like a Friday night show.
That sounds like a fun show.
It was a fun show, yeah. And it was, as the name sort of implies, I feel like the one during the daytime, the after school one, was more like very pop-oriented. And the Friday night one was more rock-oriented. So it's a couple of cool different ways to watch. But then MTV, Much Music came along. I grew up in the country. We didn't get to have cable TV. So I couldn't actually watch it until I moved into the city. Now, I have to ask, how big a deal have music videos been in your life for your generation, would you say?
My music video experience was very limited when I was younger. It was because, you know, that's when the internet was around. People were posting it on YouTube and Facebook and stuff like that. So I didn't actually have the, you know, dedicated programming
right
to music videos. And then I didn't personally, when I was a kid, I didn't have internet access till I was older. So my first...
Just restricted your parents.
My parenting decision.
I didn't
have devices. And
that's fair.
I didn't really know what the internet was till I was like 10.
Okay.
It was a while.
Yeah.
But I do remember occasionally, it didn't happen very often, but my mother would actually, she would find out about these music videos and she would, you know, sit me and my brother, sister down and be like, okay, funny music video to watch, or this is popular right now, let's watch it. We'd watch it together.
Awesome.
And no, those are actually some fond memories I have with my mother. She's sitting us down. We watched it. I remember some when they came out was Gangnam Style.
Oh, right. Of course.
I remember that one. She also sat me down to, what is it? What song was it? Shut Up and Dance With Me by Walk the Moon, one of her favorites.
Great song.
She showed me the music video for that. And there were a few others, but...
I'm sure your mom grew up with Much Music, so she was probably part of that generation too.
Did.
So, but yeah, I remember Gangnam Style. That was huge.
Massive.
Totally different way with YouTube made, which is a game changer. Not so good for music television, but is a whole new way. Made it very accessible to people around the world, right?
Yes.
And I think Gangnam Style was one of the first... videos, if I remember, to make it to like a billion views.
On YouTube, for
so
sure.
So it was like a big deal. And I think other ones have done that since.
But they were the first super viral, super quick one,
yes,
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Like
But yeah, so with you and your friends, like say even high school, often when you're really getting into music, do you and your friends talk about music videos or watch the same music videos or not?
Not necessarily in high school. I finished high school a few years ago. And right. If there was a song that wanted to be shared, it was, here's the Spotify link. And Spotify is, you know, strictly
right.
audio. There's no right. video recorded to it. There were a few that were shared when they came out. Again, high school a few years ago for me. When Old Town Road by Lil Nas X came out.
Oh, sure, yes.
And was it Billy Ray Cyrus?
I'm Billy Ray sure? Cyrus,
that
yes.
one was shared.
And his Achy Breaky Heart.
Oh, I don't
know. Another video far before your time, but.
That's the only high school one I remember being shared. But again, in my generation, it wasn't very popular. Not popular, but at least around my friends, we didn't say, hey, let's go watch this new Taylor Swift video. Let's watch this
right.
new video. It's. If you want to listen to it, here's the link.
And I understand that a lot of people, that's like that are fans of a band or a singer, they definitely YouTube still, like their views, like the music videos get a lot of views, but it kind of seems like it's a lot of people who are already fans
yeah.
go and watch those videos. Because I know, yeah, when we had music television, like Much Music, often they'd have dedicated shows. There was a lot of top 40 pop music. They'd also have shows dedicated to like alternative music or rap music and or rock music. And those were often how you would sort of find out about new bands or new singers. It was sort of curated content.
So that's how you got, oh, that's super interesting. Yeah. Instead of just searching someone up, that's
right.
how you were kind of forced into finding these new people. And
no internet, so there was nowhere to look it up. So, yeah, absolutely. And radio stations were a big deal, too. So you'd either hear a song for the first time on the radio. But then again, on the radio, you couldn't get a lot of information, and you couldn't look it up anywhere. But yeah, that's where Much Music came in. They introduced you to the arts, the artists. They introduced you to new music. And yeah, that's how you get turned on to new singers that you may have never heard of before.
That sounds so fun, actually, how you would just, by coincidence, just be watching, say, on Much Music, a Backstreet Boys
right.
video, and you've never heard of them before.
Right.
And then you fall in love with their music because you just so happen to catch it at the right time.
Exactly. And to be fair, I'm sure it's a whole industry, right? Obviously, there's a whole recording industry that would choose the artists and choose who to promote.
Of course.
And with the dawn of music videos, it became a lot about the image became very important.
Yes.
Because obviously, it was more visual than ever been before. So artists like, I think, like when the early years in the 80s, when Much Music and MTV came out, there was artists like Madonna and Cyndi Lauper, Prince, Michael Jackson was huge.
We're taking
and they,
over.
They all had like a very unique style. So they're, and I mean, great performers as well, but, and some of them great singers, but part of it, a big part of it was their image, their look that, that drew people in. Yeah, interesting too. Even the VJs, they called them, who hosted the music shows, so introduced the videos. They would have little concerts, basically, at Much Music, 299 Queen Street West, a famous location that's still, I believe, the studios for CTV. Back then, that was the home of Much Music. They'd have concerts out in their parking lot, basically, and the biggest stars would come and perform, and they'd interview them, and anyone could go and try and get in. I never tried it, but you go in and I think you probably had to get a wristband or something to go into the vicinity.
So it was like a small concert kind of thing?
Basically it was, yeah, yeah. And hundreds of people would show up, so they'd have to like sort of shut down, I think, part of like Queen Street.
That's a big
in order
deal.
To do it. So it was a big deal, yeah. And you could just go, and I had definitely did go check out the studios because they had these big open windows.
You'd look in.
And you could see them working. And sometimes the VJs, as they're hosting a show, and like the nice weather especially, they could come out onto the sidewalk and like talk to people passing by randomly. And,
many celebrities.
Yeah. And sometimes, yeah, they were celebrities themselves. Absolutely. And back in the 90s, because that's when I really started watching, there was like a few that I was fans of. There was Erica M, Rick the Temp Campanelli was big, Master T. There's a lot of them that they were sort of celebrities in their own right because they got to hang out with the biggest celebrities in the world.
In the music industry, yeah.
So, yeah, it was really the coolest job you could have. And I'll share another little story with you. I actually once entered a contest they had to, it was a Much Music Temp contest. And the whole point of it was anyone could enter.
Okay.
And I think there's probably some age things. You probably had to be 18 or something. But the gig, you actually got to be a temp at Much Music for 3 months or something. So you got, if you won, you had a chance to go learn what the job entailed. And it was a temp position, but there were, and I think they did it for a few years. I think he even got like a car or like a car lease maybe for a year or something. It was something like
better
that,
than
I believe. So it's really, it was a big deal. And, but I, obviously, it didn't work out for me. There would have been thousands of people who applied. And I didn't have any, I don't know if you even had to have, I don't think technically you had of experience, but it probably helped. I remember that one of my favorite VJs, Rick the Temp Campanelli, that's why he got, had the name The Temp, was his nickname, because
that's how we got the job.
He was a temp, yeah, and they liked him, and they kept him around, so.
Nice.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
He made a career off it.
But yeah, it was a really cool era. I will say that it did run its, had its era.
It ran its course.
It did. In the 2000s, there was a couple of things going on at the same time. I mean, the rise of the internet, where people could look up information, and people, artists did realize they could start sort of advocating for themselves too. And you probably know, like I've heard of artists, now I know it's not uncommon for people to be discovered on YouTube or social media, right?
Social media songs go viral, and artists pick up traction and they just build off it. It's very common nowadays.
The good and the bad of it, right? Because before, record companies had so much power in who got a chance to break through. There was also the rise of reality television also made an impact, because a lot of companies realized they could make reality TV, you know, pretty cheaply. So slowly became more
reality TV took over.
Right.
The music shows.
And so between those two things, that's the main two reasons, I think, why we don't really know, like, Much Music and MTV may exist in some format. Like, MTV is still, I think, out there for reality TV, but not as a music video.
Not a music station anymore, I don't think.
But it was a pretty fun time while it lasted.
It sounded like quite a ride, Mark.
You talk to your parents about it, and they'll let you know,
they'll
too.
They'll fill me in.
But I want to thank you for joining me today. This was like a really fun conversation. And I'll fill you in some of the cool 80s and 90s music videos you should check out on YouTube, okay?
I will be delighted to check it out. And Mark, of course I had a good time. I learned a lot. I learned about music. I learned about you and what you get up to when you were my age. It sounds like a lot of fun.
I like to hear your perspective too. So thank you for that. See what the young kids are getting up to. And you still love music, right?
Of course
it's
I
just
do.
Just different ways of consuming content.
I can now just pull it up on my phone whenever.
Yeah, that part's pretty cool, I have to say.
It's quite convenient.
I do the same thing now that I have no other choice. But thanks again for joining me, Owen.
Anytime.
And that's all for today. I'm Mark Dixon, and on behalf of my co-host Owen Loudon, thanks for listening to Pop Culture Mark.
That wraps up the podcast from students at Durham College, and we hope you enjoyed. If you would like to tune in to any of the previous episodes we've shared, Discovery is found wherever you get your favorite podcasts, or head over to our website, 1059theregion.com, and click on the podcast tab. Thanks for listening. Tune in next week as we continue to explore the podcast universe.
Discovery, the radio show for podcasters, exclusive to 1059 The Region. Expand your audience and extend your reach. Send us your podcast, info@1059theregion.com.